2 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This episode is a spotlight on Extermination, Issue 4. It's from writer Ed Brisson. We have layouts by Pepe Larraz, pencils by Ario Anandito, inks by Dexter Vines, colors by Eric Arsenia, letters by Joe Sabino, and cover artist is Mark Brooks. We have variant covers by Mark Hawthorne and Frank D'Aramato, John Cassidy, and Laura Martin. So this is continuing the story of the young X-Men who have come back in time, or come forward in time rather, because Hank McCoy, the Beast, believed the X-Men had lost their way. And so he reached back into the past to bring his younger self and the other four first students of Charles Xavier to the present to kind of inspire the X-Men and remember what they were fighting for. So since then, although their mission's been one of hope and mutant advocacy, the original five X-Men's adventures in the present have changed who they are and the way they see things. So far in this story, Ahab, a mutant hunter from the future. This is one possible future of the Marvel Universe where Rachel Gray or Rachel Summers comes from, that version of Phoenix, and she was a hound. She hunted the other mutants. She was brainwashed into working for the faction that was looking to exterminate all of mutant kind. This is the same future that is in the classic John Byrne Days of Future Past, Chris Claremont and John Byrne, I should say, Days of Future Past storyline. And they even made one of the X-Men movie based on that, although they changed around some of the characters. So anyway, Ahab's come to the present to kill the time-displaced X-Men and anyone who stands in his way. And likewise, we've seen a young Cable show up in this timeline, kill his older self, take his place, and he's been capturing the young X-Men as well. He's so far has captured Iceman, Angel, and Beast. And while Ahab's been pursuing these time-displaced X-Men, we also find that he planted a couple of sleeper agents among the X-Men, and those sleeper agents were able to brainwash Old Man Logan, Rachel Gray, Nightcrawler, and Shatterstar that we know of into becoming Hounds himself. So what the X-Men decided to do after the initial attack was to split up and keep the five original X-Men away from each other to make it that much harder for Ahab to find them all and to capture them all. So the young Cyclops was off with Jean Grey's X-Men Red Team under the water at Cerebro, and he got incapacitated by the Hound Nightcrawler, and the other three were captured. So Jean Grey, the young Jean Grey, decides against her better judgment to go with the X-Force team because she believes that they will take the fight to Cable, and perhaps she will be able to save Cyclops that way. So that's kind of where this issue starts off. We see high above the Atlantic Ocean, Captain Ahab's there in his flying Pequod ship. You know, he's really taken this Moby Dick theme to the next level. He's got those two young children, French children that were the sleeper agents by his side, as well as Phoenix, Jean Grey Phoenix, or not Jean Grey, but Rachel Grey Phoenix, as well as Nightcrawler and Old Man Logan. And they have located Cerebro. It's 25,000 meters below their current position, and they know the young Cyclops to be being held there. So they dive down toward Cerebro, because as soon as the death of Cyclops is confirmed, then they can leave that miserable timeline, and the real work of ridding the world of mutants can begin. Meanwhile, at the Xavier Institute, Cannonball is arriving with Shatterstar, another of the brainwashed mutants who's been turned into a hound, and he finds the wreckage of the battle that happened there. He's shocked by how much damage and wreckage there is, so they fill him in about Ahab attacking, and in the confusion, while Ahab was attacking, the young Cable came and took the young Hank McCoy. And they also know that those two young X-Men twins, Maxime and Manon, were with Ahab, and they turned Logan and Rachel on them. And so Cannonball says, yeah, that kind of explains it. Probably did the same thing to our boy Shatterstar. And I, you know, took a lot of punching, but I finally was able to knock him out. So they decided to take Cannonball down to the infirmary to see if Cecilia will be able to undo whatever these hounds did. And meanwhile, the rest of the X-Men are going to go after Ahab and stop him. So meanwhile, at Cable safe house, the X-Force team has arrived there, and it's pretty much shoot first and ask questions later. And the young Jean Grey keeps trying to convince Domino to stop shooting, like, you know, we need to talk to him. And Domino's like, yeah, sure, I'll stop shooting once he's dead. And meanwhile, Warpath and Boom Boom are trying to free the other three young versions of X-Men that have been captured, Bobby, Hank, and Warren. And Cable's like, I told you, the time for talking has passed. And that's exactly what Domino wants to hear, right? She wants her revenge on this version of Cable for killing the older version, the version that she had been in battle with so many times, right? Who was a comrade in arms. And Domino turns to Jean Grey and says, you heard the kid. You ain't got time for no jibba jabba. So we got a little Mr. T patois there going on. And meanwhile, Warpath and Boom Boom are attacking Cable from behind, and Jean Grey's had enough, and that's literally what she says. She says, that's enough, and she really lets her powers kind of loose, and everyone's floating up in the air. They're kind of helpless in a way, and Jean says, look, this is how we got into this mess, running around, shooting each other, not understanding where everybody's coming from. We're going to talk. You're going to tell us what the heck's going on here. And Cable again says, we don't have time for this. And Jean's like, we're going to do it whether you want to or not. So you better talk fast. Let's start with why you killed Cable. And he says, because he wasn't doing his job. You know, it was his job to keep the timeline in order and to squash any anomalies. But he gave you guys a pass, even though he knew the dangers of doing so. And Jean's like, well, if he knew it was dangerous, why not just send us back? So, because he got soft, he got sentimental. I mean, you're his mom, technically. And I didn't kill Cable. I am Cable. I just retired the older, less effective version. And the same thing will happen to me someday. And Domino's not buying it. She's like, bull, you might be the same person, but it doesn't make you the same man. Nathan never would have. And he's like, yes, exactly. And that's why I did what I had to do to stop him, to save every one of you. Ahab's here because one of you dies. And Jean wants to know who, and he says Drake. So Bobby Drake, Iceman, that's the young X-Men who dies. And he goes on to say, but the truth is, it doesn't matter which one of you dies, not to Ahab. All he's got to do is kill one, right? You, Cyclops, Angel, Beast, just one. And he completely rewrites history, because you'll never be able to go back and fulfill the past the way that you're meant to. And Jean's like, after everything you've done, why should I even believe you? He says, put me down, I'll show you. And he takes his telepathy blocker out and says, okay, I'm an open book. Go ahead. Look inside my mind and you'll see the truth. And he goes on to say, you know, you X-Men are so obsessed with fixing the future, you're willing to change the past, and you're not thinking about the consequences of that, right? And all that has to happen is for one little piece of the past to be changed, and it undoes everything, and not for the better. You know, it's not just the big battles that matter. It's the ripples in the pond. Every moment, every fight matters. And if one of you is lost here, then battles that you had previously won would be lost, right? And each of those losing battles turns society against you a little bit more, a little bit quicker. Man turns against mutants sooner. And then the Sentinel program happens sooner. And this basically dooms human or mutant kind, rather, and it brings an end to the X-Men much sooner than would have otherwise been possible. And it's all because you guys won't go back. And and young Jean sees the truth of this, and she's like, oh my god. And meanwhile, Boom Boom's like, I'm not buying it. Like why would he do this? I mean, look what he's doing. He's like torturing Angel. The real Cable never would have done this. And the young Cable, you can tell how frustrated he's like, I am the real Cable. And this House of Horrors is just the solution to fix all the changes that I made. I can't send Angel back with cosmic fire wings. He's got to go back the way that he came. And so that's why I had to give him his original wings back. That's why I took Mimic's wings. And Boom was like, and Mimic was cool with that. And Mimic actually has awakened, and he's overheard this, and he says he didn't have time to ask, but he showed me what we're up against, and I would have preferred he'd ask, but I do want to help any way that I can, even if that means sacrificing my wings. So meanwhile, 3,000 feet below the Atlantic Ocean at Cerebro, Scott is recovering from his fight with the turned Nightcrawler, and Jean is there. Saying that you're going to be okay. I couldn't have stood to lose you again, which is just kind of weird because he's like a teenager and she's old. Obviously, you know, there's love there, but still, this isn't her Scott, so to speak. But meanwhile, Ahab and the Pequot are there. They teleport in. They start fighting. And again, it's Ahab knows it's just one. I've just got to kill one. So in the fight, Gabby Honey Badger gets turned, and the X-Men Red Team is vastly outnumbered. They end up kind of retreating to the infirmary just to try to protect the young Scott Summers. Meanwhile, the rest of the X-Men are on their way. They've heard the distress call, and they're trying to get there as soon as they can. But unfortunately, they're too far away to get there in time, and they're too outnumbered. So once Ahab and his team break into the infirmary and attack Scott, even though he should hang back, even though he knows that Ahab is there for him, it's just not in his nature. He's had enough, right? And he's not going to allow Ahab to hurt anyone else the way that he hurt Bloodstorm. As soon as he sees Ahab, he's at the front of the attack. The other X-Men trying to grab him and hold him back as he leaps toward Ahab. And Ahab, for his part, seems to be able to shrug off the optic blast, and he uses his harpoon and stabs Cyclops right through the chest. And he's left there literally hanging from the wall with Ahab saying the battle's already over and you've lost, as the other X-Men look on in terror. Because Scott has been killed. And I should also mention during this battle, Cable and the rest of the X-Force team showed up as well. Body slid into the infirmary in hopes of protecting Scott. So the young Jean Grey is there to see Scott's death. So this is the penultimate issue. There's only one left to go. And obviously the consequences are dire. Because, you know, we heard what the young Cable said about if even one of the young X-Men dies in the future, how it's irrevocably going to change everything. But he did say it was Drake. He did say it was Iceman who died. And here we see that it's Cyclops. So has the future already been changed, or the timeline already been changed? Can they save Scott? It's not like they can send back the old Scott as a substitute either, because he's been dead for a long time. So, you know, I've speculated on the podcast that one of the things I kind of expect in the Uncanny X-Men weekly event is for the original Cyclops to come back. And now we don't even have the young one now. So I really do expect that this story will, and they've basically come right out and said this extermination story is the final young X-Men story. They're kind of cleaning up the house, so to speak, the X-Men house, and making everything a little bit more streamlined. But for now, it looks pretty dire. Whether they're going to be able to save the young Cyclops or not, like, could Cable, you know, go back and a few minutes in time and prevent him from being, like, I don't know. There's only one issue to go, and it seems like there's a lot still to tie up. They've got to defeat Ahab, at least the third faction, the young Cable, because really there was the X-Men team, there was the young Cable and kind of his story and his faction, what he was trying to accomplish, and there was Ahab, right? So it was three. It seems like they're on board with what the young Cable is trying to do now. And so at least he has joined forces with the X-Men. And so it's pretty much all hands on deck against Ahab. But from appearances, it looks like with the events of this issue that Ahab has accomplished his mission. Obviously, it's comics, so that's probably not the case. But how are they going to resolve this? I don't know. I wouldn't venture to guess, because it certainly looks like the young Scott is in deep, deep trouble. Although we do get a sneak preview of the last issue of Extermination, and it is the young X-Men walking toward the light, and we do see someone reaching for a visor. So it does appear that perhaps Scott, the young Scott, will survive after all. I do notice, though, that Angel has his kind of fire wings or whatever that should have got replaced with originals. But, you know, it's Mark Brooks. He works digitally, so they easily could be swapped out for the others. Maybe they just didn't want it to be a spoiler. So I do also think, and I should mention that I think the fifth issue was originally supposed to come out in December, but I think it slipped to January. Let me check that really quick. Yeah, so it looks like it has slipped, but not to next year. It's coming out in December. So 4 was supposed to come out in early October. It slipped to October 31st, and 5's been pushed back a couple weeks as well. I'm not sure why. I mean, it might be due to art issues. I mean, Pepe Larraz is getting, we see some help on the art duties for issue 4. And don't really notice. I mean, I think the art is still just as good as it has been the entire series. So it is a book with a ton of characters, so that might have something to do with why Pepe's been having a hard time keeping up. So the art is super detailed, and I don't mind waiting for a good story and for Pepe to be the one to finish it. But I will say, you know, I always worry when things slip and are a little late because you worry about things losing momentum. I don't know that that's necessarily as much of a concern here, just because it's such a impactful, fast-paced story, and it's it is the next to last issue, and then we get the last issue, issue 5. But I will say that issue 5 was planned to come out the same day as Uncanny X-Men number 5, the weekly event, and now it's not coming out until 6 comes out. So you just worry if anything will be spoiled, right, by picking up 6 or by picking up 5 of Uncanny X-Men. So, you know, it happens. Sometimes I wish Marvel would wait till they have these things completely done before they solicit things. Maybe Pepe just needed a little more lead time. But I've really enjoyed the series, not least of which because it really kind of helped me get, you know, along with Matthew Rosenberg's Return of Phoenix and the Hunt for Wolverine event by Charles Soule. It's really drawn me back into the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe, and it's introduced me to Ed Brisson and Pepe Larraz's work, which I think they're both extremely talented, and it was great to meet them and talk to them at New York Comic Con. So I very much encourage everybody to pick up this story. I think it's really sets the stage for what's going to happen in that Uncanny X-Men weekly event, which in turn sets the stage for everything X-Men to come over the year of 2019. So if you're a big X-Men fan, I feel like this has got to be a must read for you. All right, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platforms you use. The ratings really help us with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.